Hello, welcome to Sneaker Report, your weekly roundup of all the latest sneaker news and all other photographic announcements that we found interesting. It's Konstantin here.
And this is Becky.
There's a new member of staff who's called Tilly as well. She's trying to get into this whole new scene. We've been out of action for about 3 weeks, and I don't really know how to do this thing anymore, Becky. So let's just try to see if we have a muscle memory and discuss the things that we've missed. And what things did we miss, Becky?
Yeah, well, we've missed a few things because the USA decided to steal you away for a few weeks. The first big thing is the obvious, which is the announcement of the Nickel Z 28-400. We've got some interesting articles and sort of first look reviews here for you. So we're going to talk through those first. But let's just talk about this aperture range. So this is a 28-400 f4-8. VR, and this is a compact walk-around lens full frame for the Nikon Z system, something that we've talked about a few times, I think, and we weren't sure. We thought it was going to be maybe a 28-300, but they did one better, and they've gone 28-400.
They one-upped us all, but you know, 28-400, I didn't believe in that rumor because I was like, why would Nikon do something like this? We've actually haven't seen lenses like this, so it seems like Nikon decided, well, no one released this lens before. Why won't we do this ourselves? And it's a very interesting range as well. It's a good size as well. I'm sure they try to make it as small and as portable as possible. And that's why we have those weird variable apertures like f4 to f8 effectively on the longer end. What do you think, Becky? Is it the one lens to rule them all?
I think that this is one of those jack of all trades lenses. It's definitely not going to be the sharpest lens at the long end. Although at f8, it's not going to be too bad, I would say. But it's going to be perfect if you are a travel photographer or you want to take one lens out with you for a holiday or a day trip. So I think it will definitely fulfill some needs of some, let's say, more general purpose photographers as opposed to people who are specifically looking for something that's just geared to wildlife or just geared to landscape. It's one of those do everything lenses. And I'm glad that it exists now. I really am glad. I'm looking forward to us getting our hands on one. Considering the size of it versus the 24-200, which is already, we know it's a cracking little lens. It's not that much bigger. So it's going to be interesting to see what it looks like in the hand.
But what do you think? It's priced at $1,299. So that's quite a lot of money for not S-type lens. Do you think it aimed at every Joe who is buying their first Nikon camera and they want to bundle up with a lens? Or do you think it's mostly aimed at keen enthusiasts who not buying their first lens, but they dreamed of owning one lens to take with them on holiday and maybe stick a prime lens in the pocket for those shallow depths of field shots?
Well, I think if we look at, for example, the 24-200 as it our kind of guiding light here, we know that it's about £850 when it's on offer, goes up to about £950 when it's not on offer. But that's still not a cheap lens for an all-in-one. It's not the £300-400 that we used to get of the 18-200 back in the day. So This is just a small jump up in price in comparison to the range that you're getting. You're getting double the range, essentially, or double the length and the reach, but you're paying about £400-500 more.
Yeah, so it's £500 to upgrade.
Exactly. So I would say it's for people who are not in the sort of starting out in photography sort of area. But if you're, let's say, a documentary photographer, let's say you're a videographer that does a bit of everything and you need something that has lots and lots of range, or again, if you've got a little bit more money to spend and you're going on holiday and you only want to take one lens with you, then this is probably the one to look at. We've already had, as I said, some first look reviews from the likes of Matt Irwin and Matt Granger, so the fact that they've already had it in their hands and so far seem to be quite happy with it definitely gives me good feelings about this lens.
Yeah, as a documentary photographer, I really would like to blend in with 28-400. It's so small and portable that no one will notice me with this lens. But speaking of shallow depth field, actually, if you start to think about the longer focal distances, we know that even at f4 or at f8, depending on the distance between you and the subject, your depth of field is going to be fairly shallow as well. So while it is, I think, a compromise in terms of, let's say, the range and the price and the sharpness, as we would expect from this type of lens, the shot we've seen from the photographers that you mentioned look pretty good Again, would it be lens for me? Probably not. But that's the thing. My thinking of this is it's a perfect, obviously, travel lens, but it's a travel lens as a tool per se, because 24 to 200 for me is definitely smaller and lighter and something that people probably not interested that much in photography, but want to take photographs of their close ones and just the family shots. And, you know, then they probably will get 24 to 200 instead of 28 to 400. But that seems like a tool aimed at semi-pros. Could be pros as well, but something to have on a reasonable size and reasonable budget. But again, I don't think it's a fully consumer product. Okay, so we kind of, you know, discuss who is it for, but do you think, like, when people would buy this lens, would they consider something like 100 to 400 as an alternative to this lens, or something like 180 to 600 from Nikon on a budget? Do you think that's something that people would consider? I know that the most common questions on lenses like this, 28 200, 24 200, 28 300 back in the day, was, does it take teleconverter? And obviously it doesn't take teleconverter, full stop. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. First of all, is obviously, yeah, the design of the lens elements, normally the rear elements are quite close to the rear of the lens as well, and then teleconverter won't go on it. But another thing is obviously the lens would be stopped down from 1 to 2 stops, and that would make it really hard for the camera to focus. Effectively, at f8, if you put 2x teleconverter, you'll get f16, and there would be just too dark for the camera's focus system. So the question is, are there any alternative that people may want to consider with this type of lens? I can only think of longer telephoto lens, but that means we're losing the wide and mid-range side of things, and these 24 to 200. Is there anything else, Beck?
I think that you've got to look at it as Nikon kind of bring their lenses out in sets usually, or close enough to. So if they have the 24-120 f4, then you might pair that up with the 100 to 400, because although I wouldn't say the quality is the same, they're close enough. The 100 to 400 is a fantastic telephoto zoom, and it does take teleconverter. So we've got those, that sort of combination that would cover the same range. Both are heavier, both are bigger. The 24 to 200, obviously a bit wider at the wide end, but you could, again, potentially pair that with a 100 to 400 or a 180. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to pair that with a 180 to 600, but you could. The 28 to 400 is one of those lenses where you're not really planning on taking anything else with you. It's about 725 grams. So it's not as light as some of the shorter end lenses, but it's definitely lighter. Let's say half the weight almost of a 100 to 400. So if weight is a limiting factor for you, I know a number of photographers who do struggle with the weight of their equipment and who then have to look at alternative solutions to carrying their equipment, or downsizing, or going micro four thirds even, because they can't handle the weight of the heavy stuff. This is actually a really, really nice solution to that. So I would say it kind of sits in the middle. It's not the smallest option available, but it is smaller and lighter than some of the much heftier options that are out there.
That's right. And no one else did the lens like this before, which is, again, something new from Nikon. Good to see. I think it's a good announcement. It's been a bit unexpected. Well, we saw it rumored, but you know, personally, I thought it was a bit of a wild rumor, you know, just because the range is so wild, really, you know. So I think Nikon should really look into Canon lenses and release one of those super cheap 800 mils and 600 mils, or maybe 100 to 800 zoom or something like this, or 100 to 1200 zooms. Why not? Because we got a lens like this. Throw anything you can. And obviously, as Nikon is no longer publishing their roadmap, because they said the system is full featured now, so now we're not going to tell you what we're going to release, except if I want to, of course. But we're going to see surprises like this, and I'm excited for people who didn't know they needed it, really. Overall, if you want to see any videos on this lens, have a look at Matt Irvin's as well as Mark Granger's videos, as well as Seth's video at Adorama's channel, and this size comparison published on Nikon Room's website, so have a look at that as well. And hopefully we'll get this lens soon and we can test it and we can tell you all about this. My 24 to 200 lens review was quite positive. I didn't expect it to be so good, and it was probably the best 24 28 200 lens Nikon ever released. So I want to see how the 28 to 400 will compare with it, optical quality as well as image rendering, etc., you know. So it's one of those things that would be an interesting thing to compare.
Now for some other Nikon news, we have a firmware update from the Z9. This is another thing that we missed while you were away. Sorry about that. But anyway, this is version 5.0, and they added some big chunky features.
Okay, so let's talk about this firmware then, Becky. I mean, it's version 5. So Nihon already released four major upgrades. The release camera was version 1.0. So four major upgrades, all of them had quite a lot of features. So let's talk about the features of this firmware. We're not going to go through all of them because the list is quite extensive. We're going to talk about the most important ones.
Yes, I would say that if you do have a Z9 and it applies to you, it is worth reading the full article on what changes they have actually made. That is available on the Nikon website. We'll include the link in the description for you. But in the meantime, just kind of highlighting the major points for those who maybe don't have a Z9 or just want an overview. One of the biggest things I would say is the auto capture option. They've actually also added airplane detection to this auto capture option, which is exciting if you're an aviation photographer.
Yeah, I mean, auto capture option already existed on Z9, so that's not new, but they modified it and they added features to it, basically. So yeah, apart of airplanes, you can now shoot in DX crop mode, which is quite useful. And overall, they added visual adjustments, so you can actually set it up a little bit easier nowadays, which is really good. They also added reserve function, where you can basically set up auto capture and then effectively save the settings. So that way you can basically tell the camera wait for a few hours before taking the shot. And let's say in Rich's video, he says, let's say, for example, if you're waiting for sunset or sunrise and you got plenty of time with your hand on your hands to set up the camera. So that reserve function, it is quite useful, I would say. They also improved high-speed capture, where they had 15 frames per second option. You had 30 frames before. Still on JPEG, but now you have an option of adding fine JPEG instead of a normal JPEG. I think one of the major features that people ask is actually give us RAW in order to capture, but I guess that's still to come. I'm not sure what the hardware limitations are on that, but it would be interesting to see maybe even at, let's say, 10 frames or something like this. Let's just wait and see if that's going to happen.
They also added some interesting things for professional photographers, like the high frequency flicker reduction, where you can now add a preset of the high frequency flicker reduction mode that you would like. For example, if you are shooting in a venue, that's quite useful. And they added some of the portrait options. So rich tone portrait is now available, portrait impression balance, skin softening. These things were available in the Nikon Z8 as well as the ZF, but they've added them to the Z9, which we are grateful for because a lot of Z9 users do shoot portraits and it's useful to have.
Indeed, because technically, well, Z8 and Z9 are sharing the same sensor, so why not to, add those features as well? You know what feature is missing, though, is the pixel shift that was just introduced with the Nikon Z8 firmware. So I think that yet still to come, and there's obviously no limitations. If they manage to do it on Z8, so I'm sure we will see the Z9 at some point, but it seems like it took a step back and we probably will see it in maybe version 5.5, or no, maybe even version 6.0. But yeah, lots of visual updates. They changed the menu structure and just the way the menus work. They added the new customization features as well. Now you have different shooting banks for video as well as still. So before it was only one bank, so the setup could be very different for stills and videography. And yeah, lots of things that came in with Z8 firmware, like focus border, etc. So list is extensive. Are you happy that Nikon is continuing to support their flagship cameras? Or not, Becky? You're clearly not happy. They're updating my camera. I don't like it. It's too much.
So unhappy. I am very pleased that they are adding features to the Z9. I think that because this camera is really their flagship, they're just kind of backing up that fact by saying, look, we're going to add more features. We're going to make it even more usable for professionals. We're not going to hold back. We're not going to necessarily save these features for a future camera release. We're going to give them to you now. And I really appreciate that from Nikon. I think a lot of Z9 users probably do as well.
That's true. And I think Nikon is new Fuji now. Remember when Fuji, when they released their first XF mirrorless system cameras, they used to update their firmware on basically several years, and we see huge improvements, let's say, between autofocus speed and all sorts of features. So they kind of stopped doing that now. And I'm not even talking about Canon Sony users. They were kind of on a regular schedule as everyone else. But Nikon, with the release of Z9, as well as Z8 now, is clearly pushing the envelope. When we see the version 0.5 update, so for Z9, which came out, 2.5 years ago, that's really, really nice to see. And as we spoke before. I think it just builds a foundation for all other cameras that Nikon will release eventually, and Z6 Mark III, or who knows, maybe in Z7 Mark III, you know, but it builds that feature set that then later should go there. And also, you know, it's kind of, I find myself at the point where, you know what, when we get such big firmware updates, you now actually need to go through and read all those features and how to use them. You're now buying a camera that's not just taking picture and shooting on, you know, aperture priority, shutter speed priority mode, then you set the frame rate and maybe autofocus, the way the continuous focusing works, let's say for sports and wildlife photography. Now you've got all sorts of niche features that people may want to use or not, but they will need to read about them. And I'm talking about auto capture, you know. It's one of the things where you can set up the way that you only get auto capture when the subject moves, you know. So you can do all sorts of little things like this. And that remind me, remember where you like have your iPhone and you haven't updated for a couple of years and you update it and then you don't know how to use your phone because everything looks different, you know? It's kind of this way, but a little bit obviously more technical. And I think people who are now spending a lot of money to buy those cameras, they're very niche. They will need to spend a bit more work. Obviously, you can use it as a normal camera to take regular pictures, but they're so highly customizable. And I'm not talking about menus and buttons, but actually the customizable how camera operates, that a lot of people buying those cameras now potentially need to read the manual. You know, it's one of those things that people didn't think of back in the day.
That's right. The instruction manual is definitely a necessity, I would say, at this point, particularly considering how much these cameras can do. I mean, the mind boggles really at the level of intricacy and technical capabilities that the cameras have. So if you are a Z9 owner, if you're planning to own one, or a Z8, or anything really that comes off the line now, it's definitely worth reading the instruction manual. There's only so much you can learn from YouTube videos. However, Speaking of YouTube videos, Rishi did publish his first look at the firmware. This is actually from the Nikon Europe official channel. So Rishi's obviously become an official spokesperson now for Nikon Europe, and rightly so, it's about time. But he goes through some of the firmware update in more depth. There are other things which he leaves out, which is entirely fair enough. Otherwise, it would be just like probably a 2 or 3 hour long video. But it's very, very interesting. If you haven't seen it, do check it out. We're including the link to that in the description box, as well as the link to the firmware update itself. So if you do need to do it, then you can just click that link right there.
The days of throwing your manual, your camera manual, into the bin are over. So just go read the manual. And if you do find the manual a bit too technical, go get a proper guidebook, which is written by people, not robots, and therefore a little bit easier to read. So like one that comes to mind is Tom Hogan's, and it's probably now about 2,000 pages long, because I remember his D850 manual was about 900 pages. So with all the little features that we have now in our cameras, probably double the size by now. But yeah, I think if you want to learn your camera for those specific needs and you want to use those specific needs, definitely a good guide would help.
Exactly. Now, in terms of other firmware updates, NX Studio updated so that it is compatible with the Z9 new firmware version. So we've now got NX Studio version 1.6.1. Z7 II also got a small firmware update. Essentially, it's a small wireless setting update, nothing too fancy. There were a couple of issues also where if you tap the back monitor, it wouldn't move the focus point, or the camera would take time between shots if you were using Camera Control Pro 2. Unfortunately, nothing beyond that. Same with the Z6 II, also got the same update, but we're not talking major upgrades on those two cameras, sadly. Unlike the Z8 and Z9, I almost don't want to talk about it. I'm almost worried to.
Do you think we are now ready for the new camera release from Nikon? Do you think we used up all the features of Z6 II and we're just ready for some hardware upgrade? Is that what's happening now? Because Nikon obviously is not pushing envelope with firmware updates of this camera. I think we kind of, from hardware point of view, we've reached the limits of those cameras.
It sounds like it. And I definitely would say that if there is no surer sign that there will be a replacement camera coming out, it's that these two cameras have not been updated in terms of firmware, and all we've gotten is little bug fixes. It's almost like Nikon are sending us a message saying, look guys, we can't do more with these cameras. This is all you're getting is some bug fixes. So just hang on. And I do think it is a precursor for potentially a Z6 III or whatever.
That's very true. Soon. The Manca dream. Yeah, I mean, we've been dreaming for the last, what, 4 or 5 months or so. But to be honest with you, I mean, let's be honest. Those cameras are fantastic. They still take great pictures. The camera you have right now is better than the dream camera that you don't have. Let's be honest, because it allows you to take pictures and photographs and, you know, all sorts of still imagery. If you think about it, they're great cameras. Of course, we want new shiny things. Of course, we want technology to be pushed to its limits, you know, but it's just the nature of internet, really. And it is what it is. And obviously, with the Nikon ZF out, we were given a glimpse into the future. And obviously, we can speculate about resolution of the sensor, if they're going to stick to the same ZF sensor or they're going to upgrade it to something else. We can talk about it. But don't forget the camera you have right now. Just enjoy what you have. You can always buy a thing later. The thing that doesn't exist, you don't need it now. Trust me. You just want it too much. It's my TED Talk. That's all.
Thank you for coming to Con's TED Talk. Now, talking of adding features using your equipment, maybe in a different way. This is a really strange segue. But anyway, SnapBridge has been updated to version 2.11.0. So this allows some very interesting additional functions. Essentially, they've added this easy shooting setup. Sometime back, we talked about this easy shooting option. This is essentially, reminds me very much of the D3000, D5000 days where we had that guide menu. Do you remember that on the top dial of the camera? So this is kind of that, but in an app. So you open the app, you tap on what sort of scene you're shooting, and then the camera essentially sets all the settings for you and allows you to do this. This kind of makes the Nikon system a little bit more accessible, perhaps, to complete newbie photographers. It might not be something for you and me, but it is definitely something that new photographers will find useful, because it means that they can go tap on a scene and say, oh, I'm taking a picture of a landscape or a pet or a portrait, and the camera will go, oh, these are the settings that you need for that. It's not going to be 100% perfect all the time, but it does show that Nikon are trying to include new photographers and learner photographers in their software as well, which I think is good.
Yeah, I think I can see the ad where they say, like, easy shooting setup, now in and up.
Yeah,
and exactly. They should call easy with E and Z, you know, so that would be even better, you know,
easy.
Like cool pics.
Cool pics, easy.
Exactly. I think they do really well. When you looking at any articles talking about SnapBridge, there's always a comment saying, oh, I think the main feature should be the improvement of the connection and reliability of that connection. I think it's doing pretty well. Just looking at the way other manufacturers do things, and the Fujifilm is notorious for that, or people complain a lot about their system. So it could be worse, let's be honest. But I think even compared to what it was 2-3 years ago, we definitely see improvements over there. And the more mobile devices start to come out with new generations of Bluetooth, we probably will start to see even better compatibility. But overall, I think it's not too bad. I'm glad they're updating it. And I'm sure that there's a lot of things that are happening under the hood where Nikon is notorious, not to mention any like firmware, software, like bug fixes and things. So I'm sure there's stability improvements there as well. Now, let's talk about the biggest third-party thing that happened around the same time as the 28-400 Nikon Z lens announced. And this announcement for me was quite confusing. It was the Tamron who announced their brand new 28-75 f2.8 DI G2 lens. So it's a generation 2 lens. And the question is why, really? So obviously we have 28-75 2.8 made by Nikon. We all know that it's designed in collaboration with Tamron, and it is based on version 1 of the lens. So we talked about it in the past. It seems like that Nikon provides their own housing and their own weatherproofing, while the glass elements are about the same and based on generation 1 of the lens. Generation 2 of 28-75 lens was available for Sony mount when the Nikon announced their own 28-75. And now we have a Tamron lens for Nikon Z mount based on that design. Okay, I'm a bit confused, Becky. What are your thoughts?
So looking at this, it appears that the Gen 3 Tamron lens is optically different. It has a different optical design. It's about the same weight, possibly about the same size. I will agree, it is a confusing release. When it came out, I did a little bit of a double take because I was like, this lens already exists, so why are they bringing it out? And then I was like, oh, hang on. There's a Nikon version, which is a non-S-line 2.8 lens in keeping with their 17-28, 28-75, 70-300 sort of, you know, the non the, dare I say it, the, what do we call them? Tamracons? Something like that. The Tamracon lenses, the ones that we know came from original Tamron designs, but then had Nikon casing, Nikon autofocus, everything. It was rebadged in a more extensive sense, let's say. So this is a confusing release. So obviously there is a new optical design with this Gen 2 lens. I'm wondering if that is the real key difference, because I don't see a huge amount of difference otherwise, I will be honest. But I think that we'd have to literally sit them side by side and do bench tests and brick wall tests and optical comparisons to see if there is any real world difference between these two lenses, apart from the fact that one says Tamron and one says Nikon. But you're right, it is a confusing release. It's not necessarily something that, if I had pulled out my list of what I predicted was going to happen this year, that was my bingo card would not have been filled.
Yeah, I mean, let me explain you why. It's just because we were speculating, and obviously nothing has been proven, but we were talking about that Nikon is being smart, allowing third party to release lenses, but the ones that are different from their lineup, so they don't want to kind of step on each other's toes or overlap in terms of what they do, right? So let's say Tamron releases 70-300 lens, Nikon doesn't have it. Then Tamron releases 35-150 lens, Nikon doesn't have anything like this. Sigma releases 3 prime DX lenses, Nikon doesn't have those focal distances in there. You see what I mean? Even, let's say, Voigtlander releases the lenses that are very different from Nikon lineup. Now we have a lens that is basically the same lens. It's not the same lens as Gen 2, but it does literally the same thing and covers the same niche as Nikon lens based on Tamron design does. Why would Tamron would do this? I mean, we obviously know that there's no official agreements with the companies that we've seen, but that's kind of what we saw in the past. They're releasing the items that kind of complement the system but don't compete directly with each other. And now we have this. That's where my concern and my confusion is, really, more than anything else.
I feel like maybe someone looked at the agreement that was made between Tamron and Nikon and said, oh, well, they haven't said we can't do it. So why not? But I too don't understand fully the reasoning behind it. I'll be interested to see ultimately what the optical difference is, if we can see an optical difference between the two, because as you say, it's an odd choice. It seems strange that they would choose to bring out a lens which is otherwise already covered by Nikon's own brand. That feels a little bit like the old days in DSLR terms. We always had very similar focal lengths covered by third-party brands. It's just something that we haven't yet seen in the Z range and we're starting to see now. So I think that's why we're taken by surprise by it. But it may be that in the future, there are lots of different versions of exactly the same lenses that Nikon have made by third-party brands, and it won't be surprising to us anymore.
Another point is, let's have a look at the prices. So the current price of Nikon 2875 lens based on Nikon on Tamron design is £889. So that's the lowest price I found. Now, the Tamron lens is priced on pre-order at £849. So it's a Gen 2 lens based on different design, and we assume that Gen 2 should be optically better than Gen 1. That's normally how it works when you release a version 2 of the product, the new model, it should be better, right? But it's also cheaper. Why is that? That's again where it kind of adds to my confusion, if you see what I mean. I'm not 100% sure, because it doesn't benefit Nikon in any way. It may potentially reduce sales of the Nikon version of that lens.
Potentially. I do think that there are always going to be people that will buy Nikon over Tamron, even if, or over another third party brand, just because it has the Nikon name on it. I am in agreement with you. I think it's an odd choice, and also the price is even more confusing, shall we say. But I don't know if it will hurt Nikon really in the long run. I think that if someone was planning to go for a 2875 and they were a real purist, they would still go for the Nikon version. Unless the Tamron version is optically, you know, miles better than the Nikon version. But let's see. I think we'll have more to say in a few weeks. I'd also be interested to hear what our listeners and our viewers think. If you have any thoughts on this, do drop it in the comments. We would be really interested to know.
Definitely do talk to us. We are absolutely puzzled. Do let us know what you think. in the comments below. In the meantime, we have some weekend read and watch for you.
Yes, we do. So first we have the Nikkor the 1001 Nights, number 89. This is on the fast portrait lens that photographers longed for, the 85 1.4 AIS. Beautiful lens. So do read that. And then we also had Nikon at the photography show. They were there. We weren't, but you can watch that little segment interview with them on YouTube.
Yes, there's a whole thing, little thing called YouTube. And Nikon was a photography show and they filmed this on the camera. I think once they render the VHS, you can probably be able to see it. I don't know what I'm talking about, but that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us this week. A bit rusty, but we made it to the end.
That's right. Thank you very much for watching. Please give us a like and a subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you're listening on a podcast platform, give us a follow, rating, review. Tell all your friends and family that we're back and back with a bang.
Back with a bang. You know, I was driving a lot while I was in the United States, kind of an average 3 to 4 hours a day. Yeah. And you know what I listened to while I was driving? Well, not Nikon Report, I can tell you that. But if you are driving, and like, I can't really listen to my own voice, but you can listen to my and Becky's voice on the radio called podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify Unlimited of the world. You can also find us on social medias.
You can. We are on Instagram. We occasionally post photographs of things that we have done for YouTube. So worth following us. I'm at Rebecca_Genesi. The shop is at Nikon at Gray's.
And I'm at Konstantin Kochkin. We will see you, hopefully, next week. Bye-bye.
Bye. If we survive.